Not every couple has an easy road to building a family. And for those seeking to use fertility preservation procedures, the financial burdens can be formidable. With us today is Senator Natalie Toro of Chicago, a fierce advocate for fertility preservation. She'll tell us about Senate Bill 2623 and how it proposes to alleviate financial barriers for those seeking fertility preservation services. This is the Time to Talk Fertility podcast. I'm your host, Deborah Howell. Senator Toro, what inspired you to get into politics?
Yeah, so what inspired me to get into politics was that I wanted to address the challenges and needs of our community in a more impactful way. I was a kindergarten teacher before July. I was appointed this July. There was a vacancy for my seat in the Senate. So I put my credentials forward and I was voted into the position and I was appointed that way. And really what inspired me to put my credentials forward for the appointment process was first and foremost my students. And they've always really inspired my dedication in the classroom. But it was also my nephew who was diagnosed with autism that really motivated me to go forward with this position because I saw my sister struggle with insurance companies to plan for his future, for his education and his healthcare. And I thought it shouldn't have to be this hard. And I thought of all the students that I had in families who also struggled with the same issues. And I knew that I couldn't really teach my students in the classroom if they were uninsured or unsupported, unhoused, unhealthy, you know, or in any way really unsupported. So I knew that I needed to do the work outside of the classroom to give them the supports and resources that they really deserve.
Yes, absolutely. And how has your background as an educator shaped your approach to policymaking and governance?
Teaching is a diverse environment and has given me real firsthand insights into our community's challenges and into the needs of our community. And for me, it's not just about policies on paper. It's about really understanding how they truly affect students, families, and educators in real life. And seeing the inequalities within our education system firsthand has been very eye-opening. It's why, as a legislator, I prioritize policies that promote quality, access, and opportunity for every student, regardless of where they come from. And I think my time in the classroom also taught me the power of collaboration and community engagement. You know, I firmly believe that involving stakeholders from across the education landscape is really essential in driving positive change throughout our community and our education system.
Agree 100%. And why are you so proud to be part of the Chicago community?
Well, you know, I always tell people when I'm telling my story, I was born and raised on the northwest side of Chicago. And I never lived more than a mile outside of the exact district that I represent. I went to Lane Tech High School. I didn't even leave the district for college. I attended Northeastern Illinois at the El Centro campus, which is in the heart of my district. I'm also proud to be a Chicagoan because Chicago really represents, and their people represents, resilience, diversity, and a real spirit of innovation. And Chicagoans are usually known for their tenacity in the face of adversity and their commitment to lifting each other up. And that's what's always made me proud to be a Chicagoan, but more specifically a Northwest Sider.
Tell you what, I went to Northwestern, so I know exactly what you're talking about. That resilience of a Chicago person is just something to see.
Yes, for sure.
So what advice would you tell your younger self about family building?
You know, I think about this a lot. I would tell my younger self that the depictions of families and family planning are mostly stereotypes and that they don't reflect all families. And I would tell my younger self not to get caught up in the pressures and timelines that society puts on you. As a younger person, it's easy to believe that everyone can easily have children on their own in their early to mid-20s, but that isn't the case. And it's completely fine to have a longer timeline, as most women do.
Now to the meat of the matter. Could you please explain to our listeners what Senate Bill 2623 is, and more importantly, what its purpose is in the context of fertility and reproductive health care?
Yes, absolutely. My bill, Senate Bill 2623, is intended to ensure Illinois residents have access to affordable fertility preservation options. So currently, insurers cover fertility preservation services such as the freezing of embryos, eggs, ovarian tissue, sperm, or testicular tissue for future reproduction when it's deemed medically necessary. But my bill aims to make this life-changing procedure more accessible to people who are not diagnosed with infertility and may want to utilize fertility preservation to start a family, but may not be able to afford these services out of pocket. The bill would require state-regulated health insurance plans to provide coverage for standard fertility preservation services and we're still in the process of negotiations right now. Throughout this process, I remain committed to advocating for most coverage possible for people, because it's important to give people access to these procedures that can give people the opportunity to have a child when it's best for them.
Right. And what inspired you to advocate for fertility preservation and introduce this groundbreaking bill for fertility preservation coverage?
As a woman in my late 30s, I understand the challenges many of us face when it comes to fertility preservation. Personally, when I made an appointment to freeze my eggs, it took a year to get one. And then when the appointment finally happened, I found out that I couldn't afford it. My friends and loved ones have also had to decide between paying off their student loans or even going into a debt to afford fertility preservation treatment. And also my sister battled with ovarian cancer and had to go through IVF in order to have my nephew. And that really further highlighted the importance of IVF for many women's ability to have children.
Yes. And how does this bill propose to address and alleviate these financial barriers for those seeking fertility preservation services?
So it could be covered under state-run insurance programs with some exemptions. We're looking at a change to the bill that would limit the time someone can undergo the retrieval process in a year, or limits if someone has a number of successful retrievals, but would have more support from insurance companies.
Okay, that's understandable. And could you elaborate a little bit on what the term standard fertility preservation entails under the bill and how it differs from the current services covered by insurers?
So under this bill, standard fertility preservation applies to a variety of services. It goes off the current evidence-based standards of care, and that was established by the American Society for Reproductive Medicine, the American Society for Clinical Oncology, or any other national medical associations that follow evidence-based standards of care. According to these definitions, this includes preservation of sperm and testicular tissue as well. So current services covered by insurance are similar, but are only offered with a diagnosis of infertility.
Now, there's an emphasis in your bill on covering follow-up services. Can you explain why follow-up care is so crucial in the context of fertility preservation and how your bill aims to support patients through the process?
Yeah, follow-up care, including storage of frozen eggs and sperm, is crucial for fertility preservation. This is because, of course, after the expensive retrieval process, ongoing storage fees can be financially straining. And without coverage, people may rush into parenthood before they're ready, just to avoid storage costs. By including follow-up care in the bill, we can ensure that individuals can affordably preserve their fertility for long term, and that will enable them to plan for parenthood when the time is right for them.
Absolutely. And your bill doesn't limit coverage to those diagnosed with infertility. Can you discuss the importance of making fertility preservation accessible to all individuals, regardless of their current fertility status?
Absolutely. As someone who hasn't personally faced infertility, I still recognize the vital importance of making fertility preservation accessible to all individuals. It's about acknowledging that fertility concerns go beyond just infertility diagnosis. There are various reasons why someone might want to preserve their fertility, whether it's for medical reasons, career aspirations, or personal choices. But by not limiting coverage based solely on infertility, we will ensure that everyone has opportunity to make that informed decision about their reproductive health and their future family planning. So it's all about equity and fairness in healthcare access and ensuring that everyone, regardless of their fertility status, can really take control of their reproductive futures.
Yeah, it's about inclusivity, which brings me to my next question. Given the diverse family planning needs within the LGBTQ+ community, can you discuss how your bill for insurance companies to cover fertility preservation could uniquely benefit LGBTQ+ individuals and couples who are seeking to start families?
So fertility preservation coverage is a game changer for the LGBTQ+ community and couples navigating family planning. Without insurance, the hefty cost of procedures like egg or sperm retrieval can be a roadblock to biological parenthood. So this legislation levels the playing field, and it makes it possible for them to pursue their dream of starting a family without breaking the bank. And it's about empowerment, identity affirmation, and creating opportunities for inclusive family building within our healthcare system.
I'm sure we all think this would be wonderful if it just sailed on through, but what roadblocks do you foresee in passing this bill, and what actions need to be taken to overcome those challenges?
Well, definitely getting insurance companies on board, since this is taking on higher costs for them. But I'm willing to do what I have to do to fight for it, since reproductive health care coverage is so important for all people. You know, I plan to meet with insurance companies and discuss how we can come to a compromise to get people this coverage as soon as possible. We've also already started these discussions. So I'm looking forward to seeing what we can work out.
Yeah. Well, best of luck to you on that. And lastly, for our listeners who are eager to support this bill or learn more about it, what actions can they take to advocate for its passage, and where can they find out more information?
So they can certainly look up the bill, SB 2623, on ILGA.gov to track its status and to find out the full text updates with amendments. If people want to give a personal testimony or put in a word of support for its passage, there's a YouTube video on the Illinois Senate Democratic Caucus page that'll walk you through how to file a witness slip. You can also follow my social media for updates on where the bill is moving through the General Assembly, organizations I'm working with to get the bill passed, and any amendments that are made to the bill.
Great. Good to hear. Well, this is such excellent information, Senator Toro. Thank you so much for being with us today to share your expertise.
Thank you so much, Deborah. Thank you for your time and having me on. I have enjoyed our conversation.
Best of luck. That was Senator Natalie Toro, representing Chicago, Illinois. You can schedule an appointment to talk to a fertility specialist at 877-324-4483 or visit fcionline.com for more information. And if you enjoyed this podcast, you can find more like it in our podcast library. And be sure to give us a like and a follow if you do. That's all for this time. I'm Deborah Howell. Have yourself a terrific day.